Hey everybody, Dave here. Just a quick little thing in regards to this week's episode. I didn't have a chance to edit it, I mean at all. So aside from the music that you normally hear and whatnot, you are basically hearing a live recording from a typical recording session with me and Greg. That's all extremely long. The dead air pauses left in, nothing edited out. My kid has been sick. I'm just lucky to have gotten this out at all this week. So sorry about all that, and thanks for having a listen. And the vortex opens up and we come out of the Speed Force. Hey everybody, Dave here, and it is time for Flash Time on Out of the Speed Force. How you doing tonight, Greg?
I think I'm passing on the lasagna tonight.
No kidding. I mean, wow, I've never seen teeth turn that black from just eating lasagna before. I mean, Jolly Rancher candy that, well, not Jolly Ranchers, Black Jube Jubes, licorice candy, anything that can turn your teeth that black, like whatever they were using to do that on the show. Ugh.
You wonder, too, like if they had a lot of fun recording that scene, like purposely trying to gross each other out, or if they were just kind of disgusted by it all.
Oh, of course they did. I mean, think about this. They have a black, messy thingy in their mouth and their teeth and their whatnot, and it's going to happen. You got people with something like that that looks that disgusting, you're going to try to gross people out. It's just human nature. That's what we do.
That's true.
All right. Of course, everybody, we're talking about The Last Temptation of Barry Allen. Yep. The Last Temptation of Barry Allen, Part 1. And man, I wish that we were still doing this the way we were doing it before, because it'd be perfect. We would do one episode and cover both episodes. I was so disappointed when I go, oh, I've got to watch it weekly now.
I know. Yeah. This is one of the ones where like, I can't think of another one other than maybe, the time travel episode in season one where, Barry travels back in time for the first time to redo and stop the weather wizard. Like, I can't think of another episode where, like, I was like, man, I really have to see how this ends. Because it was a really good one.
Oh, yeah, this thing was near flawless. I mean, just wow. They've been hitting it out of the park this whole season so far, with, you know, one or two minor exceptions. And this one was, like I said, dang near flawless. And why wasn't this the Halloween episode?
I know, like, I haven't seen any of the movies, but it gave me the impression of what I always imagined, like, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies to be like.
Nightmare on Elm Street movies were nothing like this. I've seen all of them. They were nothing like this. This was better as far as I'm concerned.
Right. You know, just more of just, you know, because, you know, you're dealing with, like, dreams and, like,
absolutely. Like, I mean, the premise is pretty much the same. You got Freddy Krueger coming into the dreams of the teenagers and killing them, and you've got Bloodwork coming in through his infection into Barry's mind trying to take him over. Essentially the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know that those films are a bit more gory and sometimes campy, and so it's not like a perfect thing. But I don't know, just it had a lot, some similar touches there. And I thought too that especially with this episode, the Bloodwork synthesizer music fit perfectly with it all.
Mm-hmm.
I had to actually, with this episode, I'm actually staying at my brother and sister-in-law's. And when I watched the episode last night, I actually had to listen to it on headphones. Just so that I didn't wake anybody up while watching it. And because of that, like, I felt like the soundtrack for this episode really hit home compared to what it normally does on a regular episode, just watching it in the living room.
No, I agree. Even I always watch on my big screen down here in the basement where I record, because typically, like you last night, I'm watching when everybody's asleep. So I'm in the lowest part of the house where the noise will not bug everyone on the third floor. And even listening to it through my nice system, they're going, man, they just nailed that soundtrack. It was spooky enough. It got the point across enough. It was perfect.
Yeah. I definitely think that too, with this episode, it had like one of the most for me, like one of the most shocking moments that I've seen in a Flash.
I agree. Especially if we're actually talking about when Barry turns around.
Oh, actually it's something else. But we'll get to it.
We'll get to it then.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get the description from IMDb put into the record. It's probably lacking as it is, as soon as I get my phone unlocked so I can see it again. Here we go. And here we go from IMDb. As Barry Allen stands on the threshold of his impending death in crisis, his convictions are tested when the monstrous Dr. Ramsay Rosso infects the Flash with a mysterious hallucinogenic contagion. Meanwhile, reporter Iris West Allen uncovers a vast conspiracy. Okay, those things did happen, but again, they missed the mark on other things that should have been mentioned in there.
Mm.
Like the whole reason that Barry got infected in the first place was the carryover fight from last week into this week that we saw at the beginning of the episode, which just continued on from last week, where we do get to see Ralph and Ramsay, a.k.a. Bloodwork, fall off the roof and fight all the way to the ground.
Yeah, no, I know I saw some people complain that the fight in this episode looked like it was kind of modeled it from a PlayStation 2. And it wasn't some of their best work, but I don't know. It was only for like a couple moments, so like it didn't bother me too much. And like I said, I kind of have like a lower standard, I guess, that I hold the Flash compared to like a movie. So it didn't bother me too much. But the fight itself, I thought it was pretty fun with Ralph doing some fun stretching and powers, like when he punched Ramsay from underneath the street, stretching through the manholes. I thought that was fun.
Oh no, I absolutely agree. I mean, they did the fight the best that they could. I mean, you're right. We're not talking Avengers or MCU budget here. We're talking TV budget. You're not going to get the best special effects in the world, and if that's what you're expecting, go to the movies.
Yeah, I'm probably sure too that their effects budget is probably being blown on Crisis right now.
Oh, likely.
But Ramsay takes out Ralph with a pretty devastating final attack, and basically leaves him for dead. When Barry has to help him out, which is what sets everything up for the whole episode.
Right, and that's why it's a shame when they left it out of the when they leave things like that out of the description on IMBD or anywhere, because you're leaving out a vital thing. You know, Ramsay and Ralph fall off a building. Ralph is injured. Meanwhile, Flash gets infected by Ramsay's infection. You know, you don't have to say how in that description, but you should mention that Ralph gets injured since it is such an integral part.
It takes Ralph out for the rest of the episode, even though he does make appearances in Barry's dreams. But essentially, it makes you wonder, too, if Ralph is kind of experiencing the same type of temptations that Barry is facing, just without the help of a Speed Force to guide him.
I don't know, because it seems that the way they were talking in regards to Ralph, that he seems to be pulling together just fine. He's just unconscious at the moment, right? Because his fever went down immediately and whatnot. It was just, I think the whole end game here was to possibly accomplish what was accomplished, the infection of the Flash.
Right. So I imagine we'll probably see him back next episode to help try to stop, what happens at the end of this episode.
Yeah, and Killer Frost, like, what's up with her all of a sudden, just going crazy?
No, that was kind of strange too. Like, because it didn't seem like it was just her freaking out over, not adequately being able to help Barry. Which I wonder too why they didn't try to use her powers too to try to cool Barry off, or at least like use that as like a like one moment of trying to cool him off.
No, I don't think they did that. I think they did that for didn't or I should say I think they didn't do that for one specific reason. It would have slowed down his speed healing and probably infected him quicker.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Okay, that makes sense. I will I'll give the show a pass on that one. Not that it was a big sticking point in me. But yeah, no, it seems like Killer Frost is at least going through some sort of self-doubt. But it seemed to really affect her when the attack was because she was like kind of like thrashing around when Barry was, as well as Ralph. I think it cut away to Ralph as well, and he was kind of struggling there as well.
Yeah, it does speak to some deep-seated psychological problem up in Frost's head, whereas they've been conjecturing since Frost took over the body that she might actually be afraid of death.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of pretty clear that she is afraid of death. So I guess maybe she's afraid of causing death, or like letting one of her friends die.
Don't know. But I'm pretty sure we will get the answer to that eventually. Just, I don't think we're going to get it soon. Unless it happens to come out during the episode tomorrow.
Yeah. So we have that, and then I guess do we want to get into Barry's dreams?
Yeah, let's just keep going with the A line. We'll go back and circle back to the B line, which is the Iris team story.
Yeah, we don't have to spend too. In my opinion, we don't have to spend too long on them.
No, we don't. It's a very simple storyline.
Yeah, well, and the Barry stuff is much more fun anyway.
It is. But yeah, Barry's dreams. The Speed Force has taken the form of Nora Allen again, which. It's really not all that surprising since we've already seen the actress this season already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like, I know I had seen her in some promotional stills, but I didn't realize that, I kind of forgot that she was the Speed Force, the personification of the Speed Force in his head. And, yeah, she's basically acting as kind of the, I wouldn't say Jiminy Cricket, but more of just like the encouragement for Barry to fight the infection and trying to keep him, himself.
Yeah, absolutely, because what better way to keep Barry focused than to bring his mom into it? Because that's always been a sticking point for him.
Right.
But I mean, my goodness. The Speed Force basically told him, you're going to be in for a fight here because he's trying to take you over. And yeah, I mean, that's got to be intense.
Yeah, you have to laugh at when Barry's like, oh, this won't be any big deal. And it's like, it's looking at the episode clock here, it's pretty early on. I wouldn't be so quick to say that.
Oh, yeah, like that conversation happened within the first 15 minutes of the episode when we still had like 25, 27 minutes left when that happened. Like the majority of the episode still had to happen.
Yeah, and what a mind trip.
No kidding.
It's very, very nightmarish, without going too over the top. You know, some nice visuals there. Even like when they go back to Barry's childhood room, I thought that was all nicely done. And man, just like as like the episode goes on and seeing like Barry just be more like ragged and run down from the infection. Like they did a nice subtle job of making him look kind of nasty and sweaty looking.
Oh, they did a great job at that. You're absolutely right. I mean, he looked like he was fighting an infection and a nasty one. Like everybody who's had a nasty infection knows that you get something like that, you are hallucinating. You're having fever dreams. You're having fever nightmares. You run the gamut when you're fighting something that makes you that sick. And when you're thinking a superhero that's gotten sick, I mean, from a super infection, of course, it's going to be that much worse.
Yeah, I'm reminded of Batman's first storyline with Bane, where Bane, the Nightfall storyline, where ultimately Bane breaks Batman's back, but one of the tool, not that he was necessarily the cause of it, but one of the reasons why Batman was so like beaten down during that storyline was that he was fighting the flu while he was forced to basically take on his entire rogues gallery before finally taking on Bane. Sickness is definitely not something to, you know, even superheroes need to be healthy. And that's why, like, I don't really have, you know, sometimes when, you know, characters act certain ways on a show, like, I'll kind of throw my hands up and be like, why are you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, you know, I'm willing to give Barry the pass because you don't act rational when you're not feeling well.
No, you don't. It's just not one of those things that happens.
I think definitely my favorite of the nightmare sequence had to be the Thanksgiving dinner scene.
I know, right? That was a great scene. Sitting there all eating away, Barry comes in. Hey, everybody, how you doing? And he starts looking around going, something's not right. You can just see the wheels turning, and here comes Ramsay with a thing of lasagna. And all I could think is, what kind of freaking Thanksgiving has lasagna? I know you guys just had your Thanksgiving over there in the States. Did you have lasagna for your Thanksgiving dinner?
No. The only thing that I could think of is maybe using that as like a dish for like more of like for vegetarians. Because I have been to like Christmas dinners where lasagna is an option for people that are choose to be vegetarian. So that was like the one reason why I gave it a pass. But I did think, wait, lasagna? It's not, normally it's not traditionally a Thanksgiving meal, but I can see that in a more of a vegetarian setting.
Yeah, it wasn't a big deal to me either. It's just knowing the season it is for you guys over there, because we've already had our Thanksgiving for like a month and a half now gone. And so they're going, okay, that's a weird choice for an episode that's airing like the day before Thanksgiving.
Right. But it was a nice little way to introduce some more of that blood work goop.
Oh, yeah. It was unique. The one thing I found extremely funny was watching Joe West lick the stuff off the knife. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that was a real a best of moment. Like, I hope whenever somebody takes puts stills of the episode up on like IMDb, that's one of the ones that they use.
But do you think Jesse L. Martin actually ever thought that he'd be licking black gunk off of a knife when he started acting?
No,
I'm on sure national TV.
Well, you know, he went into the series not wanting to know anything about the Flash's powers so that he could be surprised. So he was up for anything.
Wow. Still, though. That's hilarious.
Kudos to them, though. It looked like they were having fun recording that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing, too, that I have to give credit to is this was a really good Ramsay episode.
It was.
I have to say, like, in this episode alone, I think Ramsay was more threatening as a villain than any other of Flash's main villains since Eobard.
Yeah, and we still have yet to see much of Eobard this season yet, and we know he's coming. At the very least, he's going to be in crisis.
Right.
But what else? Oh, yeah, what else?
By the way, we didn't see much of Wells in this episode.
No, the last couple episodes with Nash Wells, he's only had, like, little things at the end, pretty much, or right at the beginning and right at the end. Like, but you have to admit, his whole, like, 2 minutes in this episode was a profound 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with that. But, definitely he was more active last episode. With this one, it was definitely more of just a kind of like a brief window into what he was doing.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things with that. That was pretty much the limit of the new crisis setup that happened in The Flash. I don't know, because I haven't had a chance to watch this week's episode of Arrow yet. Know if there was anything set up worthy in that show, but maybe.
No, we'll talk about it more whenever we catch up on everything going on with Arrow. But it wasn't very monitor heavy this week.
Okay, well, everybody, you can look forward to the a little Arrow talk after next week's Flash. Flash talk when we are, or Flash time, or whatever we're doing, whatever we call this segment. Sorry, guys, if you haven't noticed, it's been pull the curtain back a little bit as to why I'm all over the map. It's been a long, long week. My youngest son had one of his rounds of vaccinations this week, or not this week, a week or so ago, and the one that he got, if there's going to be any like fever or stuff from it. It usually happens within 7 to 10 days after the shot's been given. And he just hit that on Tuesday or Wednesday. So last couple of nights, he's been up a lot. It's not been fun.
Feel sorry for you.
It could be worse. His brothers were a lot worse. But in a way, it doesn't really affect me because he's more of a mama's boy when he's sick than the other two ever were. So I can't really help. It really bugs me a little bit because if he knows mama's home, that's all he wants when he's sick is mama. So my wife has been stuck.
Give her all the credit for dealing with that. I can't even imagine as someone that's yet to be a parent.
Well, once you are, you'll be able to sympathize more than empathize.
Oh, I know. I know that.
Okay.
But I have to say, like, the one of the more interesting things about this episode is Bloodwork basically tempting Barry with having him work for Bloodwork, and that he was offering Barry basically a chance to never have to die, and showing him in a hallucination of him running up to a car accident where someone's died, and then bringing them back to life using Bloodwork's abilities. And I don't think it's too much of a temptation for him yet, until, ironically, when he talks to the Speed Force, and the Speed Force basically saying, well, actually, he is telling the truth, and that's what makes it even more sinister. Is but if Barry takes it, he's basically losing everything that makes Barry Barry. And because Barry is ultimately actually kind of terrified of what's coming with Crisis, he kind of goes off the deep end, which for me leads to probably the most brutal moment that I've ever seen on the Flash. Like, it was a bit kind of shocking when I saw it, but with Barry vibrating his hand through his it's not his mother, it's the Speed Force, but the image of his mother, and doing exactly what Eobard did to his mother.
Right.
And I was just kind of like shocked by that.
Yeah, that now that you mention it, that did take me by surprise quite a bit.
And even just the way of, like, it didn't kill her, but it obviously brought her a lot of pain. And just seeing her, like, kind of flinch back from Barry, like, that's it was a moment that, like, I really had to kind of like think about for a moment there, because it's probably the worst thing Barry has ever done. And granted, he's not in his right mind. He's high on emotion and fear, with everything, feeling like everything is on his shoulders. Plus, you have the fever to throw in there, so he's not, you can't necessarily blame him. Plus, he didn't actually like kill her or anything, but still, it's just very unlike Barry to act out in that way.
Very much so. And it's right around then when we get the big Sisko moment of this episode. Because really, up until this point in the episode, Sisko has been basically, he's there. He's with Frost at Barry's bedside, tending to him. And then when Frost has her second meltdown of the episode, Sisko runs off, goes to an arcade game, which has been modified into a safe, and pulls out some Velocity 10.
Yeah, and basically injects it into Barry, which seems to stabilize him.
Briefly.
Yeah, no, this was a good Sisko moment, really showing him thinking on his feet at that moment.
It was a good thought, too. I mean, he obviously put two and two together that Barry needed some speed help and went and got the one thing that could boost his speed. Risky, based on the fact that that formula was probably derived from the V9 that killed more speedsters than it's actually helped.
Yeah, no, it's a dangerous game to play with Velocity 9.
But, in this particular case, it was a good gamble. I think it was a great strategy to employ. And it gave Barry a brief reprieve and led to the scene of the Speed Force and Bloodwork fighting over control of Barry.
Right. Which was a nice little moment with the two tugging at him from each arm. And then it disappears for a moment, and then you see Barry wake up, and he's like, "I'm all good now," which immediately I thought, "I'm going to press X to doubt here," and I'm not going to trust this until we get to the end of the episode, and it's one of those moments where I'm glad I went with my gut.
I didn't trust it either, and it was simply because as tough as the episode was on Barry, it seemed pretty convenient that that's all it took to get him out of it.
Right. And so Iris, after dealing with everything from her part of her episode, she arrives in because they had previously called Iris to, when Barry was doing really bad, that she needed to come and save him. Well, basically be at his bedside. And by the time she gets there, he's just kind of there working on stuff. And she's like, tries to talk to him, but he's too busy working on what he calls maintenance stuff, which should be another big red flag that, knowing Barry's relationship with Iris, that, that is not Barry piloting the helm.
Oh, yeah, and you could see in Iris's expression that she knew right away that something was still wrong with Barry.
Yeah, no, that was a fun little moment of just like, okay, how do I play this off without alerting him that I know that it's not Barry? And, I just love that whole moment of, like, Iris just pulling Frost and Sisko aside and be like, "That's not Barry." And realizing that, like, the three of them, and, that we're dealing with, like, only one of them currently has superpowers, which we'll see how long that goes with the next episode. they were stuck with just Killer Frost to protect them. And then Barry, reveals that, nope, he's under the control of Bloodwork and runs off and bows to Ramsay.
Which, actually, out of this whole half of the season, is the first time we actually hear the name Bloodwork.
Yeah.
So we finally get the reveal of the supervillain name, which we all knew, thanks to everything that went down during the summer. But, yeah. They really are powering through this one. I mean, obviously, the arc will end in the next episode, which is pretty much what we were promised over the summer. A nice shorter overarch for the first half of the season leading into Crisis, and we'll obviously have something new to deal with after Crisis, which will be fun.
Yeah, and, I hope they don't defeat him for good, because they've done a really excellent job building Ramsay up to be a really credible and dangerous threat right before Crisis. And I like it. And I hope that he becomes a reoccurring villain, because the actor that plays Ramsay, he's really good. Like, he is really the best one that they've had since Kavanaugh did Eobard.
I agree.
And, he's not wearing out his welcome. And if everything ends with the next episode, I would say that I hope this shows them is a bit of a success for them, and that they continue moving on in this direction.
Yeah, this is a good way to go with the show. Like, even if in the future we don't get any more crossovers as huge as what we're going to have just in a week starting from our recording time, or not recording time, our release time, because 1 week from today, the second part of the Crisis miniseries is going to release, and we're going to be watching that. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm all for this.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Especially if they find a way to just keep them alive in Iron Heights and not just kill them off for good.
Well, they could go a couple ways with this, I think. I mean, they're going to obviously have to figure out a way to contain Bloodwork. But there's a couple ways I can see them doing it. One of them is they can somehow pull the Bloodwork infection out of Ramsey. I don't know what the engine for that would be, but that's one way to get rid of it. The other one would be to suppress it somehow. Maybe I don't know if the meta dampening technology would work on Bloodwork, because I think his mutation's slightly different than the regular meta, but you never know.
Yeah,
they could do that. They might have something else planned. I really don't know, and that's the great thing I'm finding about this particular villain, is trying to speculate on how they're going to deal with him, especially going into tomorrow's episode. It's difficult to do.
Right. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the part two of that.
Me too. And we also had the B line going on, which was Team Citizen. Allegra, who was there to take care of the allergies, and Iris and Camille? Is it Camille that... I can never remember Cisco's girlfriend's name.
Yeah, it's Camille.
Where is Camille? The former DA?
No, Camilla?
Oh, Camilla, right. It's so dang close. Right. I know that. Those two names are really close together.
No, I would agree with that.
Anyway, I'm just going to from now on call her Cisco's girlfriend, and if, you know, and then Joe's wife. That's how I'm going to differentiate them from now on, because I'll just get confused.
Yeah, they were on the trail of the guy that was photographed and Ralph took the photograph of, which I couldn't remember what he was doing last time or why.
Right. That's why he was on the roof.
But he was the handler for Allegra's cousin.
Yeah. And the way he explained it is basically a delivery boy for the super rich, whatever they want delivered. No questions asked. He just delivers it and gets paid and goes on his ways. A member of some sort of secret delivery service, basically.
Yeah, which I imagine we'll see more of, you know, if they, you know, took the time to create a logo for them. So I imagine that's going to be significant. Kind of reminded me of like a Hypnotic Spiral.
It did. That's what design. I was thinking too. I'm wondering if they're going to be using this organization as the main thing for after Christmas and after Crisis.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like a maybe like a kind of bumper villain before going into like Godspeed.
Or maybe this organization is going to be controlled by Godspeed somehow. There's something.
Yeah. Oh, it's I think it's just too early to tell.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, considering it wasn't until really this last episode that it started to factor in. Of course, and also the real question is who killed him.
Right.
You know, like that's actually something that I didn't even really think about much until we were just talking about it and wondering like how this organization is going to factor in. But is there another villain that's out there that's trying to, wipe this other group out.
Maybe. Maybe.
Perhaps it's Sue Dearborn.
There's a thought. Bring her in as the actual villain, or maybe even the person who's in charge of said organization. There's something.
I think maybe just like as like acting like a vigilante, taking out members of a rival group. It doesn't necessarily have to be a villain. Just someone that's willing to go a little bit more of the extra mile, like a Punisher or something.
Maybe that is possible. Okay.
But I still don't know how I feel about Allegra overall, but I thought that I did enjoy her trying to, get Iris to talk about Barry and realize that she knows that Barry is the Flash. And I did also enjoy her talking to Camilla. And basically, Camilla letting it slip, like, oh yeah, I've known that Barry is the Flash since the summer. And her being like, really? Why am I the last person to know?
Yeah, one of those things. Yeah, Cisco used to be Vibe. And you just see the, why are you people not telling me anything look. It was great.
Well, Allegra, you're on a CW show. And if the CW shows are known for anything, it's about characters keeping information from each other.
It is. That's one of the things they are well known for, the CW shows.
Especially Supernatural.
Yep. Okay. One of the things that I wanted to talk about really quick, and I alluded to it a bit earlier, was Nash's whole 2 or 3 minutes in this episode. Is really, what do we see of Harrison Nash Wells this time around? He goes down back to the sewers where we always see him because that's where he is. Takes some sort of drilling device and finally breaks through to where he's trying to get through. And we see the alien lingo on the foreign metal wall. And he's sitting there going, okay, I've got you now. You've ran over in infinite Earths, and now I have you, which is basically the idea. And I think this is the first time I've actually looked at it and go, wait a minute. Okay, they are probably setting him up as Pariah right now. And part of this, to be quite frank, comes from a conversation I was having on the Flash TV Talk Discord in regards to this particular part of the episode, where one of the members over there suggested that this is probably how Nash becomes Pariah, because I guess from what this gentleman told me, it was Jacob who hosted the show with me a couple weeks back. He said in the comics that how Pariah becomes Pariah is he accidentally lets the monitor or the anti-monitor loose and becomes cursed to being Pariah. And I was going, well, I can't see it exactly, but I'll give you that as a theory, because unless they're just going to pull a Pariah out of nowhere, I don't see any other way of getting Pariah in there in time for the crisis anymore, other than taking Nash, having him do exactly that or something similar to that, releasing the anti-monitor or some part of the anti-monitor's plan and being cursed or becoming Pariah through that process. It's about the only way I can see that we have a Pariah coming.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad theory at all. I can definitely see that.
Well, I'm sure we will find out tomorrow whether he becomes Pariah or not.
Yeah. I did think when I saw the symbols on the wall there, I wondered if at first it kind of reminded me of, like, I was looking at them a bit and I was like, is that like the insignia for like the different members of the Justice League? Because one of them does kind of remind me of the emblem for the Green Lantern.
Yeah, I thought I saw that too.
But when I was looking at everything else, I was like, I'm not thinking well at all or anything, or nothing else really kind of clicks for that type of analysis.
Okay. And really, unless you have something else, I think we pretty much covered what we can until we see the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is basically everything that I can think of for the episode. I don't know if you want me to talk about the experiences I've had this week that are
kind of flash related. I did want to get to that because the pictures in front of that statue were brilliant. So what we're talking about here is, as Greg alluded to earlier, he's off with family for the holidays in, I think you said you're in Kentucky?
Yes, I'm in Kentucky. But I'm in the Lexington area, but she also has family in the Ashland area that I was visiting.
Okay.
Which is where a lot of this stuff happened.
Okay, well, at some point during the week, Greg was very near to the Mothman Museum.
Yeah, I was, Ashland is about an hour and 15 minutes away from Point Pleasant, which is where the infamous Mothman incident happened, where the Mothman appeared as an omen, and then about a year later, after all these sightings, Silver Bridge collapsed in that area, which is a bridge that connects West Virginia to Ohio at the Point Pleasant mm-hmm. area, and led to about, I believe, 49 people died in that accident. But it's this museum. Other than the tragedy, the town's very kind of proud of their reputation of having the Mothman visit them. Like, I went, not only did I go to this Mothman Museum, but I went to an antique store that was like right next door to kind of explore. And they had quite a few magnets of the Mothman and the Flatwoods Monster, which is another kind of close by area monster that's nearby, and as well as Bigfoot. So they're very happy with their kind of, like, if you go to Scotland, especially around Loch Ness, you'll see a lot of Nessies, which I picked one up when I was there. I happen to enjoy different little monsters from around the world and everything, and I always wanted to check the museum out, and I have to say it was definitely well worth a trip. I had to debate whether I wanted to go or not, because I knew I'd be going by myself, but it was a lot of fun. There's Point Pleasant's a nice little town that's definitely worth a visit for at least like a day, but like, the museum is not very big, but it has pretty much everything related to the case there, from like handwritten, like the actual handwritten accounts by people that have seen the Mothman, to a piece of the bridge that collapsed, to lots of photos, memorabilia, and also some memorabilia from the Mothman Prophecies movie with Richard Gere. Well worth a visit if you kind of find cryptids or UFOs even the slightest bit interesting. I definitely hope to kind of go back there again and visit it for fun.
Yeah, it looks like it was a fun time. I mean, we even have our own cryptid up here, Ogopogo.
I've heard of it.
It's very.
I don't know too much of it, but I've heard of it.
It's very similar to Nessie. Very similar. It's our version of Nessie, I believe. I'm not as familiar with it as some of the other ones, but I know it exists. I know that's what it's called, and I think it's like more of the BC Alberta area. But yeah, we've got our own cryptid here in Canada, and I think Bigfoot crosses over too. Is in the mountain ranges and whatnot as well. So, cryptids, an international phenomenon.
Yeah, and we kind of have one too, like around kind of where I live, although it's more, I would say it's more up into Wisconsin. It's the Beast of Bray Road, you know, which I've had some strange incidents, you know, kind of around where I live, but I kind of talked about that in a humdrum episode. But yeah, I don't think I've ever encountered it, but I enjoy learning about, like, you know, the different kind of like local monsters and everything. It's, to me, it's fun.
Absolutely.
But, but besides the museum, I was pleased to learn in the Ashland area in their mall, they have this really cool ice cream place in the mall. It's called the Superhero Creamery. And if you ever pass through the Ashland area, like, I highly recommend giving this place a stop, because it is like every superhero fan and kid's like biggest dream come true for like an ice cream shop. Because you have all sorts of like different ice cream flavors and frozen yogurt flavors that you can pick from. In fact, the one that I chose was a Cherry Allen frozen yogurt with which, you know, has a flash with a cherry head on it. And so I had a frozen yogurt. Of course, I had to have it as the flash since I do this podcast. couldn't do anything else. Didn't want to betray the podcast. But besides, like, all the different ice cream that they had, it's also part comic shop, which they had, you know, both new comic books, some, you know, collectible ones, as well as graphic novels that you could pick from. And I thought they were all adequately priced. And they also had like a little painting area where you can paint ceramics. Some of it, you know, being like your standard like plates and bowls and everything. But they also had some superhero themed stuff and giant robots. So if you have a kid, like, I couldn't imagine a better place to take them for like a birthday party or like a fun afternoon.
Okay. Sounds like a recommendation to keep in mind if we're ever over there in that particular area, or if you happen to live in that area and you've never been, you should go. I mean, you're close to these things. You might as well go if you can.
Oh, yeah. The way that I refer to it, it's the closest thing to a jitters that I'll probably ever have.
Okay. And with that said, I think we're going to sign off until next time so we can get to part two of The Last Temptation of Barry Allen. So, if you're looking to follow us throughout the week, you can always find me on Twitter. I'm at drallen201. The show is at Barry V. Eobard. As always, the link for the website, because it's just way too long to say, will be in the show notes. And you can email us at reverseflashtime@gmail.com. Greg, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Gregzors. And that's GREGZORZ.
And with that, we will talk to you next week.
Chat with you later.
Listening to Out of the Speed Force, a Maple City Media production.